That would be funny is the line that makes so many things happen.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we geek out about Sherlock Season 3 on the BBC, which means spoilers. Seriously, you guys, big time fucking spoilers. We're going to ruin it all.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover, and I'm joined, as always, by Tim Wick.
That's me.
And Molly Glover.
That's me.
And, we're going to start with a huge spoiler alert, because we're going to be talking about all three episodes of Sherlock Series 3.
The newest one.
The latest, the 7th, 8th, and 9th episodes of Sherlock.
Seriously, don't listen if you haven't watched it.
We really don't want to ruin anything for you, but at the same time, at this point, it's really your own fault. So, you've been warned.
Goodbye, people who haven't seen it.
And if you haven't seen it, go out onto the internet. You can find all three episodes. Go watch them now.
I think by the time this episode goes up, the first...
They'll all be on PBS, I think. They'll all have
aired on BBC America. And
PBS, too, I think.
And
PBS, and I think they're going to be streaming on Netflix. Yeah. So, seriously,
go watch them. On top of that, I think they, like they've been doing with Doctor Who, they've got that shit for sale on DVD and Blu-ray within weeks of it airing. Because, you know, otherwise, piracy. Not that we're contributing to that or
anything. What?
Because we saw this shit the day they aired.
We're piracy. Pirates.
Yeah. So, the season two ends with the Reichenbach fall.
The death of Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
Suicide, I dare say. Sherlock Holmes.
Forced suicide. To save John and his loved ones.
Because of Moriarty. The dastardly Moriarty.
Who apparently kills himself.
Seems to kill himself.
At the end of the episode, gun in mouth. Now, I had a theory about Sherlock.
I can attest to this. This is very true. The moment we watched it, as soon as it was over, Nick said, "I know how he did it," and told me the whole.
Because the key was Sherlock saying, "It's just a magician's trick. Just look away. Just look up here. Don't look away. It's a magician's trick." Well, there's a magician's trick to fake death, which is taking a rubber ball and stuffing it under your arm. And squeezing your arm tight so that you don't have a pulse in your arm. And he'd been bouncing around that fucking rubber ball the entire episode.
Yep.
So I figured it was Sherlock who fell, survived somehow, but when John took his pulse or checked him, he had the rubber ball under his arm. It's an old magician's trick. I knew that had to be a part of it. And it might have been.
Yeah, because they're total dicks in episode one.
Yeah.
And they don't actually tell you how he did it.
I am confident that the last way that Sherlock says to Anderson, when Anderson's like, "Why would you tell me I'm a nobody?" I'm confident that is what he did. Because, again, when Anderson's like, "Why would you tell me I'm just a nobody?" and then Sherlock's gone, I think that that's why. He told Anderson the truth, because Anderson's kind of crazy. No one would ever believe him anyway. But that's why he knew he was bursting to tell someone, because he's so fucking clever and he loves everyone know how clever
Watson
he is.
Watson won't let him tell.
He's so mad. So he tells Anderson, and I think that's what actually happened. I feel confident because he told one person. He said he and Mycroft had figured out 13 possible scenarios and they had it all covered.
Yeah. I think that part's true.
Yeah.
And I think we probably have seen one of those scenarios, probably not two, almost certainly not three, because they showed it three different ways, right?
Yes, they did.
Well, but one of the ways they showed it was a slash fic, like,
And the other one was that
there's no way he could be dead. I have a very far-fetched theory of Anderson's.
Right.
So then the third one we see, to me, seems like law of threes. I mean, that's the truth.
So we possibly know how Sherlock is not killed.
Right.
And he shows up to John being married and
In a real dick way.
In a super dick way. I love that. That waiter scene was super funny.
It was
though.
Super funny. It's like, nothing you see, perhaps an old familiar thing you not lost. Yeah. He's like,
no. What I love about that is Holmes honestly believes this is going to be just great.
Oh, yeah. He's going to love it.
Like, he'll be upset for a minute, and then he'll be like, oh, Sherlock, I'm so happy to see you. Because
he's a sociopath. He doesn't understand emotions and like his effect on people.
Yeah.
It's all about that reveal and getting the credit for it. And we're introduced to John's fiance,
Mary,
who's fan-fucking-tastic.
Yeah, she loves Sherlock. She gets Sherlock, it seems. In that first episode. I think we're also talking about first episode.
Yeah, although, you know, I think we got it. The arc of her character.
We can talk about
the arc of her character. And I early was like, there's more to this lady than we're seeing.
Oh, yeah. She knew the skip code right away.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was like, well, she's obviously...
How the hell did she figure out that skip code?
Ex-cop, ex-military, something.
I thought it was ex-military, and maybe that's how she and John met, was like a PTSD group or something, and we were going to find that out.
Turns out she's a nurse.
Short hair. Yeah. You know, like I thought, military.
Yeah, but no, she's got a lot more going on, which was cool.
Yeah,
that was more than just, well, we're gonna give John a wife. They're like, we're gonna make this character important.
Yeah,
in more ways than just being John's wife.
Well, and I was at first worried, like, oh my god, another woman that is stealing, you know, Watson from Sherlock, and now we're going to have to hear, and it's going to be that same back and forth. And then, no, she loves Sherlock. She gets him right away. She thinks he's funny, and she thinks he's clever.
She goes out of her way to trick them both into hanging out together without her, though that might be the second episode.
Yeah, but still. But so right away, you realize, okay, so we're not going to have to deal with, again, this tired old... Sherlock's jealous of...
That dynamic
sucks. That dynamic is boring.
It's boring as hell.
It was great in the first series.
That
dynamic is good once.
Exactly.
It's not good over and over and over again.
When they did it in the movies to the Robert Downey Jr.
The
Sherlock...
The Robert Downey Jr. movies, they did a little bit too much.
They did it a lot. Yeah. So it's clearly it's a theme that's been played on a lot. The individual crime investigation in the first episode was the Guy Fawkes Parliament.
Yes, the missing train car and the missing passengers.
And it was kind of a throwaway. I mean, it was kind of...
The first episode was not very much about the mystery.
It was all about... That's fine, that's
which,
good.
Yeah, which made sense to me, because you've got to really... what I like about Sherlock is the way it really treats these characters very well. And it deals with them as characters, not just as... a detective, as Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
And so, Sherlock Holmes has been gone for 2 years, and we want to see how all these characters that we've come to give a shit about in the last 2 seasons, how all of them respond to him being back.
Yeah.
And so the mystery is absolutely important, but what's important is more that John gets back into doing the detective work with Sherlock.
Back to normal.
The game is on.
The game is on.
I love that it's always the game is on, the game's afoot, because that's just cliche and dumb.
That sounds like Victorian speech.
So many references and in-jokes for people who are more familiar with the original.
I did want to say that I think that having in the first episode in The Empty Hearse, having the crime being kind of like at the back of burner and barely even... focus makes sense, because Sherlock is so clever and smart and so observant that he is able to solve those sorts of things almost in the back of his mind.
Right.
Like, he can be... That's just always happening.
Secondary brain.
And so it makes sense that he was... He recognized that he had to put more attention. It was more important getting John back. And that was the big case. The case was getting John back. Also, they might blow up Parliament. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And so like, it was...
But they're not going to blow up Parliament. I'm going to figure that one out.
Yeah. The off switch thing with that bomb.
Yeah.
Where he's hilarious. Like... Where he's like... And he finally goes, oh, well, I mean, I found the off switch pretty much right away. And
I
flipped it.
Switch.
Yeah, like
a bomb on an off switch is the worst thing that a terrorist could possibly have.
and just that whole. I really think Martin Freeman's acting this series is the best it's been the whole time.
I love
just
yeah
love Martin Freeman. I know I mentioned it on this podcast before, but Everybody loves Benedict Cumberbatch. I do too, but I think without Martin Freeman, Sherlock doesn't work. He's so good as
Watson. That's why it's so perfect. They really are perfect together.
You have to get both of them right to get that dynamic.
Loved Martin Freeman since The Office. I mean, honestly, you're supposed to have a crush on him in The Office. I mean, he's the crush character. I mean, he's very charming.
Also in that episode, John is almost burned in a Guy Fawkes effigy.
Yes,
which is the setup for the long plot.
And we see a bespectacled, blue-eyed dude Magnuson.
Magnuson, I'm a little disappointed, not because I think it was bad for the story, but I was a little disappointed that he only got one episode because, in a lot of ways, I thought he was creepier than Moriarty.
For sure.
I think he was creepier, but mostly because he was so cold and calculated.
Yeah.
I think he was a little more one note than Moriarty. Unfortunately,
that's true.
Moriarty is the Joker. Yeah. I mean, he's the Joker to Sherlock's Batman.
Oh, he very much is.
Magnuson is what, the Riddler? I don't know.
Magnuson would be like the Penguin, I think.
Maybe actually
with a little bit more political power and a little bit more.
The Penguin's all about dirty businessmen.
Yeah,
I mean, that's really his MO is
blackmail.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's more like Lex Luthor. Except there is no Lex Luthor in Batman, but anyway.
Yeah, it's just, but I don't know. It was good, and I very much liked the toward the end of episode 3 with the, so it's all in your mind then. There are no hard copies anywhere. The Annandale Palace or whatever, it's all 100% in your mind. It's like, yes. Boom! And he just fucking shoots him. Like, he doesn't even hesitate.
We'll get
there. All right.
Okay.
I love it.
So the second episode was the Sign of Three.
Great. Fucking episode.
The entire episode is told during the best man speech.
I loved that episode. And maybe that is unreasonable. I've read some reviews of the season that feel that episode is the weakest of the three, and I think that's fucked up.
It was like a Tarantino.
Excited to rewatch it, yeah.
Yeah, I did. I rewatched it yesterday. I'll tell you, one of the things I loved about that episode was, we've talked before about how we think that Sherlock is an atheist. And in the best man speech, I wrote it down, so I... Because he says, contrast is, after all, part of God's plan to enhance the beauty of his creation, or it would be if God were not a ludicrous fantasy designed to provide a career opportunity for the family idiot. It's like right there, Sherlock Holmes is an atheist.
I'm looking at you, Uncle Dave.
I think in this episode, we also find out as children, Mycroft and Sherlock thought that Sherlock was a dumb child.
That was actually that was in the empty hearse.
Was it in the empty hearse?
It started in the first one. It was a theme throughout the whole one.
They thought he was
stupid because Mycroft was so...
Right.
Yeah.
You must be retarded. No. Everyone else is retarded.
What I love about it is Mycroft is such a fucking idiot about so many things.
He's not observant. He's too smart to be observant.
And that's the thing. It's like they talk about how Mycroft is smarter than Sherlock, and yet he's smarter than Sherlock in some way.
Sherlock's more clever.
It's a strategist versus a tactician.
Exactly.
Nice.
That's what it
is. Sherlock's more clever, and Sherlock's more observant, and Sherlock understands patterns of human behavior in a way that makes him seem prescient. But Mycroft is so fucking smart that he sees overarching...
And I think Sherlock's more capable of abstract thinking. We see that...
Yes.
That when he finds himself in it, when it looks like he's cornered, he never really is. Sherlock's always capable of thinking himself out of the corner. And that's what happens with Magnuson in episode 3. It's what happens at the end of the Irene Adler episode in season 2.
Yeah.
Where it looks like he's been played into a corner. And the fact is, he has not. You can't play Sherlock into a corner.
Mycroft might think more linearly, but that's just because... When you're dealing with things on like a scale of an entire country or world governments, I mean, you know, big wheels turn slow.
I also think that I don't think Mycroft is a sociopath, and I think that because Sherlock is, he's more charming because he doesn't care, and so he's able to be charming because it's just lying, and lying doesn't matter. And so I think Mycroft is more of a wet noodle sock in that sense, because he isn't able to just pretend that society doesn't matter and that you can just do, and the rules don't apply.
That's interesting.
There's all sorts of arguments as to why Sherlock is not really a sociopath.
He thinks of himself as one, and I think that if you self-identify as a sociopath, that's generally a pretty strong sense of not feeling. You have a serious disconnect.
He, he clearly feels for Watson. You know, we've seen him willing to go to great lengths to preserve Watson's life, and I think that's not just there's actual emotional.
I think you can be a sociopath and be connected to at least one person.
Yeah,
I think that's completely reasonable.
So the crime they're investigating in the Sign of Three, which the Sign of Three has nothing to do with, the title has nothing to do with the crime. The Mayfly Man.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is as he's identified, a mysterious individual killer.
He takes on dead guys' names and lives in their houses, or meets women in their houses or something.
He takes on the identity of dead men.
For a day.
Yeah.
To date a woman.
Like a mayfly.
To date a specific woman.
To date specific women. And, yeah.
Get
a specific piece of information that is really the location of John Watson's wedding.
Because he has business with his old military sergeant, right?
His commander.
Yeah.
His commander.
Who's a recluse who's hiding because he is had death threats and he's wanted by unscrupulous individuals. And the wedding is a stage to have this Mayfly Man killer kill him in attendance of the wedding.
Yeah.
That's the one time he'll be out of his hidey hole.
Which Sherlock figures out while giving the best man speech,
right.
Like while telling these stories of John's bravery and compassion,
right.
He happens, his brilliant brain happens to choose the stories that are the clues that he's been needing to get.
Exactly, and I like that because there's always convenience in stories like this. It's like,
of course.
It's like, why is there this incredible coincidence that Sherlock Holmes happens to have been involved in these two cases? The two cases he talks about are the two cases that are directly relevant to what's going
to
happen.
What's his brain trying to wake him up?
the nice thing is, that makes sense with Sherlock Holmes in that his brain is saying, these two stories are important here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of waiting for him to make that connection
mm-hmm.
that these two cases are important right here.
The whole episode is kind of an example of John Watson being like the whetstone against which Sherlock kind of like, you know, hones his intelligence. Mm-hmm. And just talking about John Watson and being in his presence and reviewing the case information is what kind of solves the case.
Yeah.
As is kind of the way in their relationship, I feel like. Like, John Watson might point out one or two details and might be there for, you know, medical opinion or whatever, or for a strong arm, but ultimately it's like Sherlock bouncing these things off Watson are what kind of help him puzzle it out.
But it's
Watson
also
tethers him in a way that helps him, his manic, you know, his weird manic genius can, like, function up here without flying away into true, like, heroin addiction or psychosis.
Right.
It also has this great moment, like, when they discover the soldier in the shower, and Watson just takes over in the most remarkable way that makes you realize that Watson is not just a sidekick. That these two are equals. Watson is not as smart as Holmes, but Watson has unique abilities that are genuinely important.
Yes.
Well, and that leading into the third, I mean, a very serious theme in the third episode is that John Watson is addicted to danger and this, like, life of on the edge, you know, crime and criminals and, you know, hanging in the balance, and that his bride, wife, Mary, who we find out is not who she said she was at all.
Yeah.
And a completely fabricated backstory and life right now because she was in special services or something.
Or something.
We don't really know.
We know she was an assassin.
Yeah.
I know that much.
And it may have been, like, government
sanctioned
or not.
Yeah.
Some other
government.
She had just been a hired killer.
They say you're British now, but that's not.
We know
not,
she's not British.
She's not British. Or at least she's not born. Yeah, so. Yeah. But in that is, and when he says, like, you know, why me? And it's like, because you chose her. You chose her, like, and for a reason in your brain. And that, I love that it's, he doesn't just put up with this. He's not being dragged along for all this Sherlock stuff. And when Sherlock says, you know, oh, I've just got a case, you know, no sane person would want to get involved with it at all because it could ruin your life. And John says, are you trying to put me off? He says, well, absolutely not. I'm trying to recruit you. Because yeah. he knows already that that's and how he works.
It harkens back to that first episode, and one of my favorite moments from the first episode. I went back and watched season one after watching season three. When Holmes says to Watson, basically, you've seen, you know, so many dead bodies as a military doctor, and Watson says enough for a lifetime.
Yeah.
And and Holmes says, would you like to see some more? And Watson's like, oh God, yes.
Yes. Yeah, that, and when he points out that, oh, you left your cane at the bar. You've been running, jumping, climbing, like, maybe, I mean, just this is what you need, and I love that like you say, you know, if Watson is the whetstone that Sherlock is sharpened on, then Sherlock is the electricity that makes John Watson feel alive. Yeah. Otherwise, he's dead inside and he hates his life. I mean,
Mycroft even makes the observation about how Watson, it doesn't miss the battlefield, it isn't suffering from fear of the battlefield. He misses it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the signs of three, Molly, are?
They are increased appetite, sickness in the morning, and changed taste and perception.
Because Mary's pregnant.
Mary is pregnant. And John and Sherlock, he basically just kind of muses this to himself.
Yeah.
Like, unfortunately, he's saying it into a microphone.
Yes.
Right. Just kind of thinking aloud.
While he's playing violin for their first dance, he just kind of goes, oh, by the way, you're so clearly pregnant.
Another beautiful moment from that episode is when Holmes admits that he loves to dance.
Yeah.
Privately to one person.
Yeah.
And it's just a beautiful moment where you learn something about Holmes that he doesn't tell anybody. That makes him a more complex character.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in the third episode that add to the complexity of Sherlock Holmes and his backstory.
When he's shot.
Well, the heroin.
Oh, yeah.
The third episode is his last vow.
John's neighbor comes over to their house, and she's crying, and her husband's missing again, and he's like, oh, this is the drugs one, you know? And so it's like, oh, there's this place that he and his friends hang out, and so he goes to a crack house and busts in and finds the husband, and as he's talking to him, a guy in the corner sits up and goes, John? And it's Sherlock.
Yeah.
Fucking... heroin. I mean,
in a heroin den. Yeah,
opium. Hi. Heroin. Yeah, which is the character.
Opiates,
but he says he's doing it for. He says he's doing it for a case.
Right.
But everyone's very upset.
Mycroft, especially.
Molly slaps him a bunch of times.
And Mycroft alludes to it being a previous problem.
Yes, says he's called their parents.
Yeah.
Because that's how serious it is. And when he keeps saying it's for a case, and everyone says, what case could possibly be worth that?
Mm-hmm.
Because they all, I mean, going back to
Did we meet Sherlock's parents in the second episode or the
third? We met Sherlock's parents in the first episode.
Yeah. The first episode, okay.
Because
Mycroft takes them to Les Miserables.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they are...
They're so typical.
They're astoundingly normal-seeming so far.
They live in Oklahoma.
The actors are the mother and father of... I can't remember if it's Freeman or Cumberbatch.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's actually really fascinating. The actress who plays Mary... is Martin Freeman's longtime partner.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and the parents of Sherlock, I think, are Cumberbatch's parents.
That's great.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, they live in Oklahoma, and they do line dancing. But they are British, very British.
And so in his last vow, the big bad of the series is revealed to be Magnuson.
Magnuson!
Who is not as jolly or crazy or manic as Moriarty. He's more dark, sinister, I think.
He reminds me of the in Fargo, the big fella, the German that's a little bit because he's got some kind of Eastern European
very quiet.
He seems German, Austrian. He's quiet, spectacles, very very crystal clear. Is
but
it safe?
Dangerous.
That's all I can think of. Is it safe?
Sure.
And he does these crazy asshole things all the time. You know, he walks into...
He seems to have magic glasses that can read information about people is what it sure seems. That's how they present it. It's like an HUD.
They set it up.
It looks like an HUD display.
HUD?
Yes.
And the question...
Don't say HUD, just say HUD.
HUD.
It looks like a HUD.
The question I have you know, and this is in spoiler territory, so we can talk about this, is Holmes, about three quarters of the way through the episode,
yes,
claims that he's figured out this dude, his glasses are where he where he gets all his information. He
puts on 4G, LTE, facial recognition.
Yeah.
And he puts on the glasses, and of course, nothing happens. So my question is, does Holmes figure out at that point that this is all in Magnuson's mind?
No, I don't think so. I think he's genuinely thrown, because he looks... unless that's an act.
He's good at looking genuinely.
If that's an act, that's amazing. But he sure seems completely... Yeah. He seems gobsmacked, because he feels very clever that he's figured this out. You have a dead-eyed stare because you're reading, and then puts them on, and he seems very like... And it makes... I thought that that was because he'd recently been doing heroin. That was my thought, was that he's a little fuzzier than he's supposed to be. And then maybe he's a little slower.
Mm, well, morphine. He's on morphine at the time.
Right.
I meant, he's been doing heroin. Right. like literally within days of this. And then doing heavy drugs fucks you up for a few days after you stopped doing it entirely.
So when he's on morphine, he's on morphine because he's shot.
Yes.
By
Mary.
By Mary.
Mary shoots him.
And professionally so.
Yes.
She shoots,
like,
shoots
he says
him.
It's like surgery.
Yeah. She shoots him surgically, yes.
She shoots him.
Incapacitates him.
In such a way that he will die unless... Help arrives immediately, and the first thing she does after she shoots him is call for help.
Yeah, she calls 999, so the ambulance comes, and she also doesn't kill Magnuson.
Right.
Which she could have easily
done.
She could have easily killed Magnuson and not Sherlock.
But at that point, she's under the impression that Magnuson has the dirt on her
physical
somewhere.
Yes,
else.
And that it could be released or
right.
For whatever reason.
If she knew then what we knew by the end of the episode, she would have killed him right then.
Well, of course.
As evidenced by the fact that Sherlock knows it.
And I like that Sherlock, he's looking, when he looks at her, and whenever he looks at someone, there's always that kind of word cloud of all the things that he's observing. And when he sees her, there's all the things he starts observing, but everything changes to liar. So that she's surrounded by just a cloud of liar, 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 because he's realizing he can't trust anything he sees.
Anything he's deduced about her, because she could be faking it.
And so it's all just wiped clean, which I love.
So she's...
And if you go back and look at the first time that he looked at her in the word cloud, there is
the
word
little,
liar.
Yep. He sees it,
And so she is... She's so good of an assassin that she can shoot with surgical precision, but also she's a good enough liar to have fooled Sherlock Holmes up to this point.
Sherlock Holmes, who was giving her scrutiny because it was
John's
fiance. Of course not.
Yeah. So clearly she's a woman of consequence. I mean, she's not someone to fuck about with.
Which
excites me for the next series.
And 4 and 5 are planned.
Which I think contributed directly to John. So she gives John a flash drive that has everything about me. This is everything. This is my story. My real name, what I've done, who I am, everything about me. And we eventually discover that he doesn't read it, and he throws it in the fire, and he says that he just wants her to be Mary Watson. And I think that what you just said, that the fact that she did fool Sherlock Holmes and all that, I think... Even though he doesn't say it, he knows, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think he probably took into account and thought to himself, like, it must be huge. It must matter. It must be a woman of consequence if she was able to fool Sherlock
Holmes.
Something
tells me that in the next series,
it's gonna
Mary's past is gonna be relevant.
I think Moriarty is working with Magnet. Well, okay, so yes.
At the end of the episode, we find out a few things. We find out... Sherlock and Mycroft's mother is a mathematical or physics genius.
Yes.
Who gave it all up for children.
Who gave it all up for kids with their father, who I self-identifies as rather quite simple.
Normal.
Normal.
He's the normal one.
Right. And he grounds her. And we also find out that... Either Moriarty is still alive, which, whatever, might be kind of lame, or he's
pulling a jigsaw and he's got
sort of
a disciple.
A dead man switch.
Or a disciple.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be that he trained somebody who is now taking over.
Yeah. Right. But Sherlock is about to be punished for his murdering someone.
He straight up murders Magnuson.
Stealing Mycroft's laptop and is about to be shipped off to a job where it's
which
estimated
he knows.
He'll die in 6 months.
Yes, absolutely.
And at that point, that Exodus is interrupted by some sort of message from Moriarty,
which shows up on every single screen in the entirety of the of England. Just all
just so we can see
everything.
All of our characters react to it.
Exactly.
Right.
But I think now, if we're going to assume, let's just assume Moriarty's alive or whatever. It's a disciple. It's somehow it's Moriarty. I think he's working with Magnuson and or is Magnuson and or is controlling Magnuson.
You think that Moriarty and Magnuson are connected and Magnuson's death is what's triggering this?
Yes. I think he planned this knowing mm-hmm. that it would draw Sherlock out, knowing, because he's always a step ahead of Sherlock, knows him better than he knows himself, knew that what would happen is that Sherlock would kill the man whose brain held the information that was hurting the wife of his, you know, heterosexual life mate, John, and knowing all that, knew what would happen.
Or Moriarty faked his own death in some way to use Sherlock to stop Magnuson,
so
that he could come back and
Could be that Magnuson was a threat to Moriarty.
Right, that's what
exactly.
I mean.
Yeah. Yep.
I have a theory that it's Sherlock Holmes, and this is him saving his own ass from getting shipped off to a mission.
That would be hilarious.
I hope that is what it is because it does. The message is literally the message plays the moment his plane's wheels leave the ground.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that would not. I mean, if you knew when your plane was leaving, you know, it is a private plane. It's a government plane.
Right.
So it's not like it's a commercial jet that you could plan this through.
Sure.
But at the same time, I mean, we know Moriarty has people everywhere.
Right.
Or Sherlock would know what time if it's just something he's doing on his phone.
If they do bring back Moriarty, I really hope that he's not just the mad hacker guy.
Yeah.
Like, that's so fucking boring. It's just such a MacGuffin to be like, I've hacked all the nukes, boogie boo.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I'm tired of like hacking MacGuffin.
No, I'm tired of the hacking as a MacGuffin in general. Deus ex machina.
Sure.
Literal Deus ex machina.
Right.
Because really just that's the, or that hacking and it's untraceable.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that usually Nick and I are both like, come on.
You can figure out something.
So before we get to five questions, do you guys have like a favorite moment from the series three?
God, I got so many. Visually, a moment I really liked is during the best man speech. You know, he's just finishing the best man speech, and you see that he is now that all the pieces just locked into place, and he drops his champagne glass, and you see the champagne glass dropping in slow motion as we watch Holmes making his coming to his conclusions, and the really cool thing about that is seeing how fast he works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I could pick other scenes, but I liked that one a lot.
I really liked it wasn't just one series. There were several times, almost once an episode, where John Watson had just a cold, righteous fury.
Oh, yeah.
That was, I mean, just like the first one where he was
justified.
So upset with Sherlock that he was back, that he was, it was like, I mean, it was just an I can't even begin to speak to you kind of a thing. And then in the third one, too, when he finds out that Mary, Sherlock tricks Mary into confessing, basically, agreeing that everything he's just said about her is right.
Shadow in the hallway.
And you can never tell John, and he can never know because it would kill him, and he's right there.
Yeah.
And his face was just, and the whole, like, is everyone in my life, like, a lie? Like, does no one respects me enough?
And at the same time, you have to wonder if part of his anger was that she didn't trust him to just tell him.
Yeah. Well, of course, what it
like,
is.
It would kill him. It's like, really?
You
think that would kill John Watson?
It's always that.
Yeah.
It's never, you know, it's never like, oh, that you would lie about who you are. It's always that you wouldn't think you could tell me. I mean, I just, that's...
Yeah.
I think, and I don't know, it's a super small detail, but it's mentioned a few times in this series. What's the landlady caretaker?
Mrs. Hudson.
Yeah.
It's been referenced before a few times, but it was referenced like almost once an episode this series about her mysterious past that Sherlock bailed her out from, and the her big secret that Magnuson knows about her is marijuana.
Point. Yeah. Yeah.
Marijuana use or
like, and exotic dancer.
And yeah. Exotic dancer.
She used to be an exotic dancer, right. And her husband ran a drug cartel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's something specifically about her and pot. Like, so, just this little old lady ex-stripper, yeah. Pot mogul.
And she's like, I just did the typing. Like, she's
yeah.
Very, like,
yeah.
I do want to say real quick, I want to see if I can find a screenshot of it, but when I was rewatching this just today at work, and I saw, I paused it when Magnuson looked at Watson for the first time, because I saw that it said pressure points, and it said, Harry Watson, parentheses, sister.
Yep.
Alcoholic. Is her name Harriet?
Yes, it's Harriet.
Okay.
That's from episode one.
Okay. Because I didn't remember it, and I'm like, it says Harry, but it must be Harriet then.
It is Harriet's. Harriet is his sister. His sister is we know was in a same-sex marriage.
Okay, yeah.
I think Clara was the name. Anyway, I just watched that episode.
So, second question is, does Sherlock say something about having another brother?
Yes.
Something with Mycroft, it didn't work out that one time with that other brother.
Yes.
That didn't work out.
There's an implication that there's something really dark.
Yeah. Like that maybe like he killed a brother or it
we
sure
see
feels...
a flashback scene with Sherlock and a dog. And
right.
Something about the dog is sick and the
he
dog
says they're putting me down too. It's not right. You know, like
and
yeah.
You have to wonder, is that really a dog?
I'm
glad we're geeking out about this season because I thought this season was excellent.
I'm really excited for series four. I know it's going to be a year.
They've hit their stride certainly. The previous two series, even with Moriarty being Sherlock's ultimate nemesis, whatever.
Yeah.
This series was my favorite so far. I think
series one, episode one is probably my favorite just because it's such an exceptional introduction to the world. But this season is probably my favorite
Let's
season.
Just hope he doesn't Moffat it up. I mean, from here on out, really, is the thing. Like, and I know you both are Who fans. You know what I mean by that. Let's just hope that it doesn't turn into... And then Moriarty's back again, guys, right? Everyone hates Moriarty. He's scary.
We got to have him. He's a
Weeping
fan favorite.
Angels. I mean, Moriarty.
Yeah, right. Well, if you guys have seen... If you're all caught up on Sherlock...
I hope you are now.
Yeah.
If you have favorite moments or theories for the next series... let us know. Leave a comment.
And if you think you're wrong, we're wrong. Fuck you.
If we're wrong, if we've missed points, feel free to point those out too. We have five answers from a listener, Shannon.
Shannon Johnson. Yeah.
Shannon Johnson.
And I will be playing Shannon. I'll play the part of Shannon.
Shannon, if you listened last week, you heard the episode, we answered five questions from Mud, and this is Mud's fiance.
Yeah. So here we go.
Question one. What's the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days?
Bridesmaids. I love this movie because most of the funny parts were improv. I also sympathize greatly with Annie, the lead character, because I know what it's like to be so broke that you can't do anything with your friends and being too afraid to say so. And I believe Kristen Wiig is an awesome comedic actress. All good points.
Yeah.
She's a genius. If I am like a dream, is to someday be compared to her. For the physical gooniness, the fearlessness,
you have a lot.
Yeah,
there's a lot going there.
Yeah. She's one of my comedy idols for sure. Like just
she is.
She really is fearless.
She's hilarious.
Yeah,
and she, when she was on Saturday Night Live, the thing that I always noticed was any sketch that she was in was funnier than any sketch she wasn't.
Absolutely.
She made the people around her funnier.
Yep.
And that's a gift of a really
Absolutely.
Good comedian
mm-hmm.
performer is they make the people around them
because
funnier.
You're subtly funnier.
Yeah. So, question two: who is your favorite atheist character?
I know that others have said this, but I would have to say Paul the Alien. He's traveled in space and visited places we can't even begin to imagine, so I believe he would have the evidence that there isn't. Also, I kind of wish he were real so that he can do my messed up eye due to my messed up eyesight. What he did with Kristen Wiig's character and cure her blind eye.
Yeah.
I'm terrified by the prospect that I may one day go blind. So that's a scary ending to that. But Kristen Wiig comes up again.
Yeah.
And she is awesome in the movie, Paul.
Yes, that's true.
She'd almost be my favorite atheist character from that movie.
I'm just saying, like, maybe I need to see that again. I remember being very good, but I was more excited about it than I think it was.
There's some very funny parts. When he puts knowledge in her and heals her eye, and she's realizing that there is no God, and she's coming from this super Bible Belt, like her creepy dad or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, then I'm just going to, like, swear and get drunk and have fun. And she's trying out swear words. Yeah. She's trying to figure out how to swear. And, like, that's a really funny part.
I feel like maybe because it came out right after Pineapple Express that there was just no way for it to compare.
Seth Rogen has a weed smoking ex.
Yeah, there was just no way it was going to be the same. Yeah. But it was good.
Yeah.
All right. Question three is, what is your geekiest hobby, Shannon?
I got to say, I love this. I collect cookie cutters. And not just your everyday, everybody has kind of like the Xmas ones. I like weird ones. My collection started with a pack of them from a sewing catalog. That pack included a scissors, thimble, spool, and a sewing machine.
Weird.
The odder, the better. I just saw on Facebook a set of Doctor Who themed ones and had to wipe the drool off the keyboard on my laptop. I have Star Wars themed animals, some regular ones that other people have. My favorite one is a mini one shaped like a turkey. I used to cut pie crust pieces to decorate my Thanksgiving pumpkin pie.
Brilliant.
This is just weird because I hate live turkeys.
Birds suck.
No, it makes perfect sense. You hate live turkeys, and that's why you're making them into pie.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, no,
see how trivial you are to me, turkeys? I decorate my pies.
I would love to see that collection. Yeah. Especially if she gets the a Doctor Who ones.
Yeah, yeah, Shannon, post a picture.
Yeah, please do.
Question number four, what is your favorite sandwich?
My favorite is with leftover turkey. Bread really doesn't matter, but
hate turkeys.
Yeah. But I prefer some sort of whole grain wheat oatmeal. It's also really good on the Italian bread with the sesame seeds on top.
Ooh, yeah.
Never rye. Ew.
Damn.
Butter on both slices of bread, then cranberry sauce, kind of spread like jelly and lettuce. Sorry, kind of spread like jelly and lettuce. Because you don't spread lettuce.
No.
I like to go kind of heavy on the butter and cranberry, and I never use margarine or a butter substitute. I really want one now.
That makes me think of the sandwich. Okay, so in Friends, Ross. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ross talks about the sandwich, the Thanksgiving sandwich, and the secret is the gravy-soaked slice of bread in the middle.
The moist maker.
The moist maker. But no, Thanksgiving sandwiches are that's a tasty treat.
That's the best part of leftovers is, like, turkey, Miracle Whip, salt, like, nothing else. Yeah. Just that is perfect.
My perfect sandwich is a turkey's corpse.
The bones of my enemies ground.
All right, question five. Shannon, what's the stupidest thing anyone's ever said to you about your atheism or being an atheist?
I'm not really open about my atheism. I am much more open and vocal about my hatred of organized religion than my atheism. And I wouldn't really say that it was stupid, but rather guilt-causing. I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness and spent a very small portion of my adult life being active before realizing that I hated it, and it made me feel uncomfortable, unwelcome, and pretty much worthless. And my mother, who is an ex-Catholic and practicing Jehovah's Witness, says things like, I really wish you would start going to meetings again. Meetings is their term for going to church.
Oh, yeah.
She took her Catholic guilt-mongering and used it in another way. And why do you think...
I'm sorry. Oh, my gosh. It's true.
It's true. And why do you think it was so stupid? I think this was wrong because I'm an adult, and rather than speaking to me about why I won't return and trying to understand my point of view, she treats me like a child who doesn't want a bath. I was made to feel like an outcast within the religion. Once I was out, I was able to see it for what it was, a cult. They teach you to not associate with anyone outside the religion. They teach you to cut all ties to family that isn't part of the religion. So they basically cut off all support systems that you have had in place from infancy on. So if anything horrible happens, you're fucked sideways up the ass with a pineapple. Speaking of Pineapple Express. They tell you that you're relying on God for your support, but you're not. You are relying on them. And having discussed this with my best friend, who is also a recovering JW, they aren't consistent with their teachings. Her congregation in Ohio encouraged her mother, who was in a loving, stable marriage with a man who was kind and caring and took care of his family, to divorce him. And the congregation we were part of in Wisconsin encouraged my mother, who was in a horrible marriage to a verbally and emotionally abusive drunk who couldn't sober up enough to get a job to support his wife and four children, who screamed and swore at them and used them as slave labor on his farm because he was sleeping it off, to stay with him. It didn't make any sense to me. So
yeah, you should, you know, Shannon, you should really, really read James Zimmerman's book.
Yeah, if you haven't already.
Our friend of the show, Deliverance at Hand. He also is a recovering JW, and I really do think that's the proper term.
Recovering
JW, recovering Mormon, recovering Scientologist.
Yeah.
Because they are cults. I mean, more so than the rest of religion. I also am very anti-theism.
Part of it is that they're so insular. I mean, it's all or nothing. All your family, your friends are there. And so when you leave, you are fucked. You have to start completely over.
The idea of suppressive persons is pervasive through all three of those. The idea that anybody who's not with you is against you. Any entity that's telling you, if you're not with us, you're against us, is no good for you. That's just not good.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Sherlock would agree with that.
Yeah,
that's just common sense deductive reasoning.
Yes.
Thank you for your answers, Shannon. We appreciate sending them in. If you would like to send us your answers to our five questions, you can do that at fivequestions@geekswithoutgod.com.
We do want to mention, coming up, please mark your calendars for a Fearless Comedy event, Die Laughing. We are doing a 50-hour comedy marathon.
50 hours
from April 4th to April 6th at the Sheraton... Airport Hilton.
Mall of America Hilton.
You can find information on Facebook. We will post a link to it. It is a fundraiser for Fearless Comedy. We're trying to raise $100 an hour, so we need as many people as possible to spread the word and to come out and
we'll be doing dares for money, so if you can think of something that you would like any of the three of us to do for money that would go to Fearless and to a good cause, please post it.
And we're planning on doing at least one
live podcast recorded at the event.
You can get a room. Come hang out with us. It's going to be a good time.
It's going to be a good time. We will be Atheist E and Comedy E.
Yeah. And Anime Detour sucks anyway. You should come to our thing instead.
Is it the same weekend as Detour?
It's the same
weekend. Yeah, fuck you, Cat Girls.
Yeah.
And on that note, we're Geeks Without God. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Nico Army sucks.
Bye. Sherlock says, remember, have your cat girl spayed or neutered.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
We might have just lost a listener.